You are back with the conversation on Hawaii Public Radio. This is Catherine Cruz. Dr. Vivek Nurekar is a professor and chair of the Department of Tropical Medicine, Microbiology, and Pharmacology at the University of Hawaii's John A. Burns School of Medicine. He spent time talking with us this morning about the multi-pronged approach to COVID-19 that local researchers are working on. It's everything from antibody and diagnostic tests to vaccines. We wanted to better understand the concept of herd immunity and why it seems so elusive right now.
So the herd immunity is a concept which goes back really at least 100 plus years now. So we know what herd immunity is since we have been facing various infectious diseases for the past many decades now. So the herd immunity happens when enough people have developed immunity to a particular infectious disease that the risk of further community transmission is either eliminated or significantly reduced. So this requires a certain percentage of population to have been exposed and infected with the disease. So in this case for COVID-19, so that they develop immunity against it in form of antibodies, and which is the key words, antibodies. These antibodies not only protect a person who has them from reinfection for a certain period of time, they also prevent them from passing along the disease to others. Because their immune systems kill whatever it is that they cause, for example, SARS-CoV-2, when they encounter it again. So in one word is that the antibodies are a key to developing your immunity. And more the antibodies are circulating in the community among these individual people, we are hopeful that there will be less amount of transmission of the disease.
What percentage do we need?
So that has been heavily debated, okay? Some people say that as low as 50% is good enough. Mostly people agree upon, or most of the researchers agree upon, that you need at least 60 to 70% of population already having these antibodies to call it as a herd immunity.
So yeah. Right now, our rate is too low.
We are significantly low. You know, we are in a single digits right now, here at least in the U.S. Now, just by looking at Hawaii per se, we started with the infection rate of approximately 2%, 1.2 to 2%. Within the last 1 week to 10 days, it has shot high. It went to 6%, 9%, and I believe as of this morning, I heard 11%. In certain communities in Hawaii, it's as high as 16, 18, 20%, but these are really pockets of this where they are finding clusters. So I think herd immunity differs, but to achieve that kind of herd immunity, we are way, way, way away from that. Without this vaccine, it's going to be very, very difficult to control the spread of this disease. Just by having some herd immunity for some few people or in the group is not going to work.
And we are having some success with different types of treatment as we learn more and more about this virus. The death rates are not as high as what we saw, I think, maybe let's say in Italy early on, or, you know, in New York.
Right. So I think there are a few treatments, and you know, this is a totally completely new disease. So even the physicians and the clinicians who were really at the bedside, they were also learning on the job, if you want to say that. Although they had experience for working with treating other similar kind of diseases, but SARS-CoV-2 had a different pattern of clinical symptoms per se. So the really, really sick people, it was very difficult to take care of them and treat them. Many of them succumbed in New York City and around the world. So being a new virus, we have challenges of what are the manifestations of this virus. But now after almost 5.5 months now, and we have learned from various other countries, including China, Italy, India. We have learned what's happening in there now, and hopefully our physicians can understand now what to look for and how to treat these patients.
How is the University of Hawaii Med School working to increase our capacity for testing here?
So I think testing has been a main focus. The University of Hawaii here, what we call the Department of Tropical Medicine, Medical Microbiology and Pharmacology at the John A. Burns School of Medicine here at the University of Hawaii, is fully engaged in working on COVID-19, various aspects of COVID-19, vaccines, drugs, diagnostics, specifically testing. So In month of March, we started working on this project, having a CLIA lab, a CLIA certified lab here. And we established a lab from ground up. We are almost there. We have received some funding from City and County of Honolulu through the mayor. And thank you, great mahalo to mayor for giving us that funding. So hopefully we plan to have some of the testing for coronavirus. We call it the SARS coronavirus 2 testing. Hopefully by somewhere between September 15th, right after September 15th.
And this would increase our capacity, our lab capacity here in the islands.
Correct. It will not only increase, but we'll also have a surge capacity in here too. So, you know, so if there's the cases coming in, we can really ramp up quickly. But I think with other commercial labs and even the hospital labs or the state lab, we'll have another place where we can do testing in here.
Okay, because I know initially our results were having to be sent to the mainland and we were having a lag.
Correct. And that was the problem at that time. And now also that was the problem in between, if you heard. Some of the labs locally did not have the reagents because there was really a short supply, and they had to cut down on the number of tests done here in Honolulu. So to avoid that kind of situations, we are having diversifying the technologies. So not everybody is using the same technique or technology. That way, if there is an issue with the supply chain, then probably we can easily handle that.
We did talk to the commissioner of the FDA last week, and he gave the green light for the saliva testing. There is, you know, an effort right now, I believe with Oceanit, that is using artificial intelligence to help diagnose COVID cases quickly so that, you know, we don't have that lag time.
We are working very closely hand in hand with Oceanit. Our Department of Tropical Medicine is doing that. Our faculty are very much engaged in the technology. I personally have been working with them for the past couple of weeks now. So yes, saliva technology is one of the technologies which is very much needed. Currently, we are in our capacity trying to develop a saliva technology also, which is available outside, but we need to make sure that we can use it in our laboratory. Each laboratory has to have its own tests. So we are trying to adapt some of the saliva technology. It is an easy, non-invasive form of getting saliva, basically. Getting a nasopharyngeal swab is a bit cumbersome, as well as some people say it hurts, but giving saliva might be much more easier, and testing that saliva for COVID-19 or SARS coronavirus 2 will be much simpler. We'll be using the same technology, by the way. The Oceanit is trying to use a different technology and hoping that it'll be much more faster too.
Well, I have had that nasal test and it is uncomfortable. So I think that if we can come up with the test that is less uncomfortable and
right.
cheaper and we can get the results quicker, I think, yes, that's going to help us all.
Yeah, I think the best way to do that is to see if we can come up with this technology, which we are trying to develop too, to do a home collection, you know, so we don't have to have a person coming to a clinic or a hospital. But if you just send them a tube, they can collect their saliva and put it back in a thing and send it out. And or somebody can pick it up or they can drop it off. So that way it's much easier.
Now, you study lots of viruses. What is it about this virus that challenges you and you know, fascinates you? Just, you know, it is the first time that we've seen something like this.
Right. It is first time that we have seen something like this, but it is not something which is unheard of, because some 20 years ago, we also saw 17, 20 years ago, we also saw SARS-CoV-1, which was there. Of course, it was not as infectious as what we are seeing here. So I think this particular virus has really taken the place of flu, which we get during the cold seasons in here. And this is occurring now. There was the initial thinking that, okay, you know, this might be only occurring in the countries where there is a warm, you know, warm temperature per se. But that's not true either. We see this thing throughout the world right now. So this is being a brand new virus, what we call, and it has evolved. So I think to get a handle on this virus is going to take some time. And again, I come back to this. There are two things, you know, you had to generate those antibodies in your body, as well as to have a vaccine at the same time.
Okay. Yeah. So it's both. Anything else that you think would be important to underscore for our listeners to understand this?
It's very important to understand that these kind of rash things which people try to do, as I heard and seen some things happening on the mainland, where you know people throw out big parties, hoping that everybody in the party will get infected. These are almost people who are very young. That should not occur. You know, we cannot allow that those kind of things to happen. That's dangerous. You're going to infect yourself, but then when you go outside, you're going to start infecting others, especially the most vulnerable ones in your household, the kapunas, as well as the more who are on the disabled side or have some underlying elements. So I think people had to be very careful in doing these kinds of rash and think that we can get a herd immunity by just throwing some party of 50 people in one small room.
Very
That's
dangerous.
Not going to work. So I think the other thing is that, as we all have been telling, and probably I'm repeating in here, but it's important that we do follow the social distancing criteria, as well as wear your mask, have your hygiene, wash your hands. I think we need to take care of each other. I can only tell quickly that at the University of Hawaii in here, one of the solutions is the vaccines. And we have groups of people who are very much into it right now. And they have had some very good data. We are hoping that some of our vaccine-related data will be coming out pretty soon. And that can be used because there is not only one kind of a vaccine. You can have various different vaccine platforms. And some vaccines can complement other vaccines too. So that's one area which we want to really, really focus on here at the medical school. But other areas are also important, which are working in the community. As you can see now, there are 30%, approximately 30% of the Pacific Islanders here in Hawaii are infected. But the total population of Pacific Islanders here in Hawaii is only 4 to 5%. So there's a huge disparity between why these Pacific Islanders are getting that much infected. So we need to understand what are the barriers to testing, or what are the barriers for these people to come in there. Of course, there are various different languages which have been spoken in specific. So these people may not know what we are speaking here in English. And we need to make sure that we can translate that. And hopefully that way we can take care of these people. So there are various aspects of this disease which fascinate people. You know, I talked about antibody, I talked about vaccines, I talked about diagnostics. But there's another whole human facet to that. Is how are you actually going to get it into the community which has been affected, which is highly disproportionately affected? So I think that is something which our department, as well as the university, is very much working on. And the second part of, again, you know, you can do testing, but you need to also have contact tracing. And again, the university is very much working on with the Department of Health to hoping that we can increase the contact tracing in here too. We have a very small population of Pacific Islanders in general. Mm-hmm. Whether they're Chukis or
yes,
or others, but the rates of infection among them are over
30%. Yeah,
that is unacceptable. We had to do something for that, to see how can we really get into these communities and work with these people one-on-one. You need these translators in there too. They're very difficult to find. So I urge these communities to have some of the people come out in here and do the translations of that from English to their language. So I think that it becomes important that the message is very clear.
That was Dr. Vivek Nurkar, Chief of Tropical Medicine, Microbiology, and Pharmacology at the UH John A. Burns School of Medicine, talking about the efforts underway to tackle COVID-19.